Well, and speaking of secret evidence and political repression, the illustrious Tom Ridge, our Homeland Security press gang boss, will be in Madison at the U.S. Mayor's Conference tomorrow. That's Monday morning at 9 a.m. The time that he was scheduled to speak has been shifted a number of times to try to undercut activists' ability to build a presence to oppose his policies. I wonder if you all want to take a minute to talk a little bit about the Patriot Act and this sort of seemingly endless stream of policy revisions that come out of Washington and also out of local, more local law enforcement projects that seem designed above all else to shut down political dissent and organizing work to build resistance to some of the government's more reactionary policy agendas. If you guys could talk about that a little bit.
Mark, do you want to speak on that?
You can go ahead.
I'd just like to reiterate what I said before, and that is that it shouldn't come as a surprise to us because this certainly isn't the first time. I'm not very familiar with them, but I have heard of the Sedition Act of, I think, 19...
What is it? The Smith Act, the McCarran Act.
Espionage Act, the rounding up of Japanese Americans after the Pearl Harbor attack. It's nothing that should come surprising to us, and it would be detrimental for us to, you know, beg and lobby the state to treat us as if we are equal human beings, you know? So... I think that, you know, that's something that we should always keep in mind is that the state is not our friend. They never have been. And that we shouldn't be expecting them to grace us with anything, any kind of fairness, any kind of civil liberties that they, you know, that supposedly are there for us.
And a large part of our political work thus far has been encouraging people to organize around ideas that make them more autonomous and more self-reliant and not dependent on the institutions that are the powerful institutions that try to monopolize those roles in our everyday lives, and that's a large part of our role. It's a large part of our vision for the world where communities will take their will become responsible, manage their own affairs in democratic ways.
We hope that Madison listeners to our stream today, who are going to come tomorrow morning in Madison, Wisconsin, to protest the appearance of Homeland Security Czar and Fuhrer Tom Ridge, will embrace the idea of raising the cases of Ahmed Ben Souda and Jawadat Abu Azza and Farouk Abu Muti publicly in front of the world press, who will be assembled tomorrow to hear the latest pronouncements from Ridge. And we hope that one of the things that can happen is that word will spread as protests against Homeland Security Director Tom Ridge and Attorney General John Ashcroft break out across the U.S., that these cases are projected as examples of a much broader attack against the rights of everyone.
Ahmed, you were brought into immigration court on Wednesday under the rubric of an INS project called the Special Investigations Unit that not a single immigration attorney that I talked to had ever heard of before. Although, interestingly, the guy, William West, the special INS agent that seems to at least at some point have been the head of this very obscure unit, was also one of the chief INS agents involved in trying to railroad Samuel Arian and his brother-in-law in Florida, an effort that has been consistently rejected, even though Mr. Al-Najir remains in prison with no criminal charges, shockingly. I wonder if you could talk a little bit, and of course, you know, only insofar as you feel this is safe in terms of your case, about the demeanor, the line of inquiry, the character of this very obscure special investigations unit of the INS, and just what it is that it seems that these individuals are after.
Right now, and as far as I could understand from my lawyer and in court, the data that I was taken in there, they made it a closed hearing, shut out to the all the media and public out. I had some of my friends there, a group of actually two of you were there, and several others were there outside the courtroom who wanted to be inside. And when I went in and sat down with a lawyer, the judge announced that the proceedings would not be recorded, and the lawyer also was scribbling down a notebook telling me that the government lawyer had asked for a continuance. So procedurally, I mean, I don't have much experience or understanding of the court system, the way it functions, or what they would pull out. So I've been relying mostly on the advice and the of my lawyer, and he seems to think that the next likely step would be for them to use secret evidence, and that most likely the next court hearing will be closed. So I hope a lot of you will be out there just to make it clear to the public and to the media that these things shouldn't happen behind closed doors, and any information that the government could use against me as far as being a threat to national security is, you know, we will easily dispel with the literature and political work that I've done, that we'll publish and make available to the public. I really don't see how they could get away with that, and especially if all of you are out there, I don't see how they think they can make a case of themselves against me, for detaining me longer in these conditions.
Well, and we've seen over and over again that when the government invokes the need for secret evidence, almost invariably that means that they have no evidence, or they have fabricated evidence, and that really the agenda is to keep someone locked up under repressive conditions and stop their work and shut them down. That's invariably what has come to light when the feds have deployed, you know, secret evidence as a way to try to keep people under legal attack, and then been forced to bring that quote-unquote evidence out to the light of day, which raises, I want to shift gears here a little bit and go back to a part of the stream that we think that we might have lost. Ahmed is an anti-authoritarian Arab activist working with other anti-authoritarians in particularly the Champaign-Urbana area on the issue of Palestinian solidarity and support for the basic rights of the Palestinian people. I wonder if you want to revisit that and talk a little bit more about that work, the character of the approach that you all specifically bring to that work, the efforts that you've made to undercut the kind of Zionist propaganda that we've seen out there that really distorts the conditions of the Palestinian people, and the character of Palestinian resistance to Israeli apartheid and Israeli ethnic cleansing. If you could talk about that a little bit.
All right, I'll start on this, and then maybe if Hadir or Matthew want to jump in and add anything that I don't cover. But our approach, again, has been along consistent anti-racist, anti-imperialist lines, anti-authoritarian lines with regard to the Palestine-Israel conflict, where we have come out and in public demonstrations, in flyers posted all around campus, clearly clearly signed with the name of our group, with an email address, and for people to contact us, where we've written letters into the student newspaper, just put our ideas out there, and well, we've held weekly pickets, you know, just so people can come up and talk to us about, holding banners so people can approach us and talk to us about our issues and our perspectives. All our work has been very public in that sense, along Palestine, Israel, and in terms of the vision we have for the future of the region, and in terms of the tactics we deem necessary in this country for the the Israeli state to be held accountable for apartheid, to be dismantled, is something that we've been very clear about, with, which is the reason we've come with this divestment campaign to join the divestment movement in this country and get that kicked off in Champaign-Urbana very successfully with a lot of support. And the way we've applied our principles consistently in terms of presenting the case for Palestine and their resistance, in terms of talking to people about the inalienable right of a human being to defend himself or herself in their home or the community against attack and against oppression and injustice, and the way we've obviously been clear about the critique of U.S. imperialism and of U.S. foreign policy and the intrinsic racist nature of the whole process, where Palestinian people are portrayed as being savages, basically, just as every other oppressed people in the world struggling against colonialism and imperialism and apartheid have been portrayed the same way, as it was in South Africa, where they were called terrorists by people in this government, by the official, and according to the official U.S. government line back in the day of South African apartheid. So our efforts, I think, have been successful because those principles were consistently applied, and again, because we were not afraid to take on issues like what we see for the future of Palestine. People have asked us, well, divestment, when does it end, you know? When do we have to stop pressuring the Israeli state? And we've said it should end when the apartheid system in Israel and Palestine is completely dismantled. And some have said one state for all, one secular democratic state for all people. We've said no state, but communities of direct democratic communities for of united Palestinian Arabs and Jews to organize their own judicial, economic, and military affairs autonomously. And without imposition of U.S. imperialism. And we've also talked about U.S. imperialism in the context of Puerto Rico and Colombia and other cases around the world. We've looked at it historically. We've looked at the historical role of European imperialism and colonialism in Africa, and then the genocide and destruction and oppression of hundreds of millions of people. And this is all part of the history that we embrace, and we try to bring to people and to establish the connection between ordinary people here and ordinary people all around the world, and the institutions that oppress us and exploit us with impunity.
Well, certainly it's been argued that by many activists over time that one sure sign of success and effectiveness in movement work is increased state repression. Hence, we have the arrest several weeks ago after a number of raids on his house of Farouk Abdelmouti, for those of us who may be dropping into our stream just now, a core organizer for the Palestine Aid Society in the New York area, extremely high visibility Palestinian activist in New York for a number of years, and Jaudat Abu Azza, a Palestinian activist with Canadian citizenship, a student in the Boston area, who's been working with the Boston Answer Coalition. But both of these individuals, along with you, Ahmed, have been particularly active on the core issue of Palestine, Palestinian solidarity, Palestinian human rights, Palestinian resistance to Israeli apartheid, Israeli repression, and Israeli ethnic cleansing. So I wonder if you all want to take a moment to talk about this apparent campaign that seems to be developing on the part of the feds to come after Palestinian solidarity activists. And what this says to those of us that may be doing work particularly on that issue, but also people who are more broadly involved in work around opposition to corporate globalization, environmental issues, and so forth, and do a little bit of connecting the dots for us, if you could.
I'm assuming that what I said before got cut off, is that right?
Well, we're going to revisit this. We know that we have people, it's a long stream, we know that we have people dropping in who may not have heard the earlier part of that interview. These are important issues, so, you know, we know that we've got a wave of attacks that seem to be targeting secular, progressive, non-native-born Arab activists in the United States who are working explicitly on the issue of Palestinian solidarity. So if you all want to revisit that for a moment and talk a little bit about that, Ahmed, in terms of how your case as a political prisoner fits into that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what I mentioned before was like you said, why we're facing this new campaign waved on us by the feds, while we're getting this this type of treatment and this type of attention, and I think it's mostly due to the new direction that the Palestine Solidarity Campaign has taken. It's no longer just about ending occupation. In recent years, the demand for the right of return of the refugees has come up, and now it's an inalienable, and we stand behind that as an inalienable right for the Palestinians. The equal rights to equal access to water, rights to live in land as free, equal individuals, which in effect means an end to the Jewish state as a Jewish-only settler colonial state, but rather as a land of equal rights for all. This is something that has been very alarming, not only to the U.S. government, well, not only to the ADL and AIPAC and other Zionist groups, because they have no answer to that, especially because it's founded on anti-racist ideals, but to the U.S. government, it's also alarming because it's going to expose them. It is exposing them as supporters of racist regimes such as Israel, along with other regimes in the past, and their continued support for the systematic implementation of white supremacy and whatnot. So this is something that obviously there's going to be a large amount of alarm. And you know, and it's funny because we've been receiving indications that Zionist groups have been told to turn in names to the FBI of Palestine solidarity activists. So who's in collaboration with who and why? Also, not only do we take a stand against Israel, but we also take a stand against other Arab regimes in the region who are also, functioning along the same lines. We have been very vocal against Arafat and his cronies and the U.S. support for them. We are very critical of the fact that the focus of the Palestine resistance has in the corporate media has been, you know, Arafat walking around his torn down compound and also, while at the same time only focusing on Israeli victims, humanizing only the Israelis. We want the resistance and the focus of the resistance of the Palestinian people to return to the Palestinian people on the ground. We don't want to know what Arafat is doing at home 24 hours a day. We want to know why people are resisting, what their views are. We were very distraught about the fact that the refuseniks were brought to this country with open arms. We're very hard on, quote, soft Zionists, who their only line is an end to occupation. Our line is an end to apartheid. So we don't want to hear what the refuseniks have to say while silencing what Palestinian victims have to say. These refuseniks, they've taken up arms before. They were soldiers. And they're welcomed into this country with open arms. What about Palestinian people on the ground who have been suffering for years and years from home demolitions, from imprisonments, from tortures, from beatings, etc.? So our focus is that we want the Palestinian resistance to return to the hands of the Palestinian people.
Okay, Matthew Quest here for a second. We just want to raise a couple of other issues. Can you hear me okay?
Yep, you're good to go.
Okay, good. Basically, Javier raised an important point, and that is there is some confusion among the Palestine Solidarity Movement as to how to respond to liberal Zionist Jews. People such as Elie Wiesel and people such as Michael Lerner at Tikkun want to raise the issue of saying they don't think it's anti-Semitism to criticize the policies of the state of Israel. And I emphasize policies. There, they are trying to articulate a middle position to save the Zionist state from itself. While they oppose the policies of Sharon, they don't oppose the policies of an apartheid colonial state. All the while, they pose themselves as some type of social democratic-minded person or as some type of humanist person. It's a sham. And so what has happened is those type of intellectual ideas have filtered down to the campus movements where people try to start dialogue groups. Dialogue groups as if all power relations are equal, as if while we dialogue, the United States is the proper arbiter of peace and justice. And we reject that nonsense. We say that when they try to tell us we have permission to speak on behalf of Palestinian rights only in a certain context, we tell them to go to hell. We don't accept that. We don't accept that. We don't go for that. We also, when they raise the issue, they try to demonize us as irrational. They try to say, oh, well, what do you think about suicide bombers? We have a very clear answer for them, which is a different answer than some people among the Palestine Solidarity Movement. We say, look, we are against attacks on civilians. We are against an attack on civilians, okay? But we support a war of national liberation. A war of national liberation is where professional soldiers and police officers of a military occupying colonial state are expendable. And we also say that we are not sympathetic to the acts of suicide bombers who attack civilians, but most importantly, we don't want the young people to commit suicide and blow themselves up. We want to encourage and show solidarity with autonomous organizations where the youth and the people that are the most alienated and make the most sacrifices are in the lead. And what is happening is you have these corrupt leaders, whether under the guise of secularism or religion, saying that, okay, these are our great freedom fighters, and they commit suicide when they commit these bombings, and the youth of tomorrow who should defend the democratic future of the Palestinian people against these reactionary elites who want to achieve privilege at their expense, okay, their lives are cheap, and we don't want their lives to be cheap. We want to encourage them to live, and we want to encourage them to survive in a democratic armed struggle. Ahmed, what do you think about that? Why don't you speak about that?
Yeah, no, I'm just I'm seconding everything you say. This that critique is essential and to the a part of this whole process of showing the Palestinian face in this country, you know, and part of that is showing the face and the reality of a Palestinian. Boy or girl who's grown up under repeated detention and beating and torture and rape and expulsion from their land, and part of that process is also showing the story of the militant activist who has taken up arms against a bulldozer or tanks or soldiers who have invaded his town and attacked his homes or his neighbor's homes or his or her family's. And all those voices need to be heard. Instead of if one is a Palestine supporter in this country, instead of bringing Israeli liberal soldiers into the country to speak about how they decided not to shoot that kid or bulldoze that home and thus got arrested and a nice ticket to the States, you know?
Let me jump in here. This is Madison Indy Media, Chris G here, talking to Ahmed Bensouda, an anti-authoritarian Arab political activist in the Champaign-Urbana area, who's been detained by apparently both the INS and the FBI, and apparently strictly because he has the audacity to be lippy about U.S.-sponsored Israeli apartheid, genocide, and ethnic cleansing of Palestinians. We're also here with some of Ahmed's colleagues in that work, Matthew Quest and Hadil Asali, also two anti-authoritarian activists that have worked with a large network of folk in the Champaign-Urbana area and also nationally. I wonder if we could take a minute, Ahmed, if you want to rally in here. Obviously, the issue of a democratic secular state is a little bit controversial to some of our listeners who probably don't like the state part too much. But if you could take a minute to talk a little bit about why that's a concept that is just so antithetical to what actually goes on in the ground, on the ground in Palestine right now, the kinds of daily insults, indignities, repressions, assaults, attacks that Palestinians live under that not all of our listeners may be aware of.
Okay. Again, to repeat a point that Matthew made just a minute ago, the concept of defeating Zionism and apartheid in Israel, Palestine, might not necessarily mean one state or a state in that form, but we have used that language in the past just to clarify the position for that most of our supporters in the campaign take on the whole issue, and we do feel that that is at the core of the problem, and we've tried and succeeded in the past in confronting the historical realities of Zionism and of European and European settler colonialism in Africa and in Asia, and particularly in this case in West Asia, and also white supremacy in the context of the U.S. foreign policy today. And we look at Palestine and Israel and look at conditions in Gaza and the West Bank. We look at the housing and water regulations. We look at the way the state, Israeli state, functions in terms of building Jewish-only roads, and we look at also the Israeli state itself and the minority, the 21% of the population who are actually Palestinian-Israeli, living as third or fourth class citizens. And we bring that all into the picture when we say that this is not acceptable, that it will not be tolerated, and that there needs to, as well as that needing that having to be confronted publicly in this country and people educated about it, there needs to be a clear definition of language in the movement, in the Palestine Solidarity Movement, in tackling this issue, in saying, no, we will not accept, and the Palestinian people would not or never settle for Bantustans and for reservations in Gaza and the West Bank, and the Palestinian Israeli citizens will not accept living and being treated like dogs for the rest of their lives and for future generations. And we say that this kind of power will not be defeated unless power is taken away from it, and it can't be lobbied to or appealed to on its moral basis. And we can't dialogue with it. It has to be forced by international pressure, international isolation of the Israeli state and of the Israeli elite and the Palestinian elite as well. Arafat and his cronies, as we've called them in the past, need to be isolated in the process of dismantling the apartheid system in Palestine and Israel. And the Palestine Solidarity Movement in this country needs to welcome that challenge and open arms and step, and in some cases, step back from unprincipled tactics of lobbying and appealing to the morals of the likes of Colin Powell and the likes of other government and state representatives in this country, and speak to the people who matter, whose opinions matter, and whose who can really make a difference in voicing their outrage at this situation, and not only at this of this case in the world, but at other also conditions in the world, other peoples in the world who are living under similar conditions. But this for us right now is the one of the prime contradictions, moral contradictions in the world today, which is we have had a successful, have made great strides in terms of our effort and our campaigning to clarify for people and for people to begin to understand how they relate to it personally, how their families and how their own people have faced similar struggles and of how the movement and the broadness of our movement is basically a testament to the universal ideals and the universal humanity of the ideals we're struggling for and the principles that we're operating along to achieve and to see the true national liberation for the Palestinian people and eventually for all people all over the world.
Ahmed, this is Dick Riley from the Chicago Independent Media Center. Some of the discussion kicking around the Indy Media Center in Madison has been the striking similarity between the tactics being used against Palestine solidarity activists in the United States through the INS and FBI's detention without criminal charge, and the kinds of attacks that have been carried out by the Israeli occupation forces against the literally thousands of Palestinian prisoners who have been arrested in the last 2 months and are being held as administrative detainees without criminal charge. And another point that was raised, interestingly enough, here in Madison was, we often talk about the globalization of resistance against transnational corporations, global capitalism, and increasingly the phrase the globalization of the intifada has crossed national boundaries. People are beginning to talk about it. But there also seems to be a globalization of repression. If we look back at the FTA demonstrations in Quebec, the kidnapping of Jaggi Singh from the anti-capitalist Convergence, literally kidnapping him off the streets and holding him incommunicado while those protests broke out, the arrests without trial of activists in Italy during the demonstrations in Genoa, and of course the tragic murder of Carlo Giuliani, all seem to indicate that there is increased cooperation among international security agencies and intelligence services targeting this glowing global movement of resistance that's seeking out new forms of cooperation, including the Palestinian struggle.
Yeah, I followed what you've just described pretty closely over the last few years, particularly since I've been in this country, and it's clear that there's a sense of urgency about an even greater sense of urgency about the way that the state and states and governments around the world are functioning around this issue. But again, there's just more and more points for our side, basically for people, because we know that in all these different cases, it really simplifies our job of speaking to ordinary people and saying, look, these are the laws and supposed systems and regulations and rules and ideals of enlightenment that governments say they function under. But when we try and hold them accountable for those ideals, they fail miserably, and they fail miserably every single time. And it really exposes them for what they are and the way they function. And while they're struggling just to maintain the status quo, we're struggling because we and our loved ones and people we identify with and support are oppressed and suffering under disgusting conditions continually. And it is imperative that we act and we move and we mobilize. And the only one mobilizing on the government's behalf is corporate interests or capitalism or the specific elites that they may have alliances with in their own country. And in the end, the place will be so much plainer and clearer for us to be made to people everywhere. And I don't see how they could possibly win. It may take years and years and years, but it will change, and they will be defeated, and we will see the world that we want.
We want to thank all of you guys for hanging in there with this really long stream. You've been doing a great job. One of the questions out of Madison Independent Media Center has been, one of the things kicking around here this weekend in Madison with the U.S. Conference of Mayors is the lobbying that the mayors themselves are undertaking to try to get increased funding for local intelligence operations and security operations in their towns and cities, to localize the Patriot Act, to get a piece of the big federal pie for new and improved law enforcement, intelligence gathering, and political spying. That's a demand that some of the mayors are making now to the feds. And it's an issue that hasn't gotten very much attention in the corporate press. So we'd like your reaction to that.
Wait, can I speak to that? This is Matthew Quest here.
Absolutely, Matthew.
Okay, well, I mean, at times like this, when the police state and the military-industrial complex has a justification, both, you know, as we know, both these institutions are big business as well as jobs for people, a lot of progressive people often say, well, we need less police, we need less, let's say, we need more schools, more health care, more education. What happens is that they really don't move out of the process of assuming that the state has responsibility for planning our economy and planning our policy. And so what we should be saying is saying, look, in times like this, we understand that after September 11th, many people are insecure and they're concerned about their security. And that's why it should be popularly self-managed community patrols without a professional police force or military. Without the National Guard, we should be saying, look, we're willing to take some type of responsibility at our community level and be a part of this discussion on planning. But what happens is that many people, under the guise of being progressive, says we need more tax money for education, for schools. On the local level, we'd rather focus on that. But it's really a lobbying effort. It's a different type of electoral effort. We're saying that we should be a part of these planning discussions where the sovereignty is ultimately with working people, where they're not just the manual labor, but the mental labor in organizing our society. And if our communities are concerned about security, we should take up those questions.
Yeah, Matt, one of the questions that came up here was the mayors are calling for increased funding for local law enforcement, and that seems like it will translate into more brutal cops on the streets of our cities, particularly in communities of color. And so while under the name of security, there have been these demands raised for increased federal funding of local law enforcement, the consequences of that seem to be or suggest that we're going to see a new wave of repression, particularly against communities of color and particularly against young people in communities of color.
Yes, Dick. Well, we don't disagree with you on that. I think that your assessment is right. I think besides opposing that march wholesale, we have to say to ourselves, what are the alternatives? And when we articulate our vision of the alternatives, I just want to underscore, but again, we don't disagree with you at all, and we're concerned about that. And in fact, if there's going to be increased repression on people of color and youth, and people of color and youth in their communities at the neighborhood level should be having discussions as to what type of planning they would like to implement and demand, not from, you know, you don't necessarily demand from the state, but you say we want to be a part of this planning process, and you dictate to them what kind of social organization we want. And obviously people of color and youth don't need any more policing from the state.
Hello, this is Wajid from the Madison IMC, and what's interesting about the mayor's conference this weekend is that the public has been totally excluded from what essentially is a corporate and municipal government planning session. and almost product distribution. You know, most of the conversations around Homeland Security and the localization of Homeland Security have been about DuPont products for, you know, vests and shields. And, you know, the conversation has, in fact, from what I've heard about what has gone on inside the convention center, has not even touched, you know, including the public in managing security issues on the local level. It's all about products and the corporate interests. And I'd like to hear your response about that. And then I'd also like to move into a discussion of just what corporations are involved in the Israeli government and what corporations we might want to focus on. But anyway, I'd like to hear your perceptions on the corporate connections with Homeland Security and local policing.
Could I say something quickly?
Sure.
I'd just like to say I have to step out now because we're supposed to go into lockdown right now, back into ourselves. So I would I just like to say bye and thank you very much for the opportunity to speak, and I hope I'll speak to you all again soon.
The entire Global Independent Media Center Network would like to thank Ahmed Bensouda for taking the time and to speak with us from inside the belly of the beast, from inside the INS Detention Center in DuPage County. We think that this may be one of the very first interviews from a detained Arab political prisoner being held by the FBI and INS from inside prison. So thank you, Ahmed. We are very, very grateful for you to take this time to share with us.
Thank you very much. Thanks for the opportunity, and I'll speak to you all again soon, I hope. All right?
Thank you, Ahmed.
We love you. We support you.
All right, love you.
Love you.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye. Hello?
Yes, hello. We're still here.
Okay, do you guys want to continue the interview, or should we, or is that okay? Or
yeah, let's continue. Let's finish up with a short wrap-up of, you know, naming some names with the corporate interests involved in, first with Homeland Security here in the U.S., and then and your thoughts on that question that I had.
Well, we haven't researched the corporate interests among Homeland Security in the U.S. If you'd like to share that with the audience, that would be great, and then we can talk about the information we have regarding corporate interests and divestment.
Well, we'll include that in the wrap-up story that we do here. But let's then move on to the summary of the corporate interests involved in the divestment campaign.
We're gonna let Aaron Love speak to this.
Here, go. Hi, I'm Aaron Love. I'm also involved in the Ahmed Bensouda Defense Committee, and I'm also a founding member of the divestment campaign at the University of Illinois. And I'm really glad that you brought this question up, because I think the wider American public is not very aware to the extent of American corporations involved in the Israeli economy and how they tie into the politics of apartheid, racial oppression, and fascism within Israel/Palestine. And some of the corporations that we've targeted in the U of I divestment campaign are corporations like Motorola, Time Warner, AOL, United Technologies, which is a military military company, Boeing, that needs no explanation, Lockheed Martin, and several others.
This is Dick Riley from Chicago IMC, and interestingly enough, we discovered on the Global Indie Media Newswire that a group of Arab boycott Israeli and U.S. goods committees across the Middle East are now calling for an open boycott of Starbucks, one of IMC's favorite places, Starbucks. And we've also learned that a national campaign is underway to call for a boycott of Caterpillar Tractor, because Caterpillar Tractor provides the D9 tractor that has been used to destroy Palestinian homes in the West Bank and Gaza, and most recently gained international notoriety because those Caterpillar tractors were used to literally level the center of Jenin refugee camp. And so a national campaign apparently is going to be launched momentarily to call for an all-out worldwide boycott of Caterpillar Tractor.
Yeah, and that's very good to see. I know coming from Urbana-Champaign, we have a lot of experience with Caterpillar. After all, Caterpillar is located in Peoria, Illinois, which is essentially our home region. And also, Caterpillar is involved in the U of I campus. I know in the future there will be demonstrations against Caterpillar at the U of I. That's something that we want to explore in the divestment campaign at the U of I. Also, in terms of the Arab boycott, while that is promising, we hope to see that the general uprising in the Arab street certainly goes beyond an Arab boycott of Starbucks, because there's so much opportunity there, so much opportunity, especially in terms of the Palestinian uprising being in the forefront off and on through the decades of the Arab struggle for popular democracy within the Middle East. And also, in terms of the Arab boycott, it's nice to see that the Arab boycott can perhaps hook up with the boycott in England, which often doesn't get reported in the United States, of Israeli goods. And hopefully in the future there will be a national boycott organized in the U.S. as well of Israeli goods.
That's great news. I think that for many indie media listeners, boycotting Starbucks is not a great reach, since Starbucks has been boycotted for some time. But it's great to add and use this boycott as a way of reinforcing the other actions against Starbucks and educating the general public about Starbucks' complicity in supporting an apartheid state and an apartheid regime in occupied Palestine. So, as we come closer to the end of the stream, we would like the Defense Committee to reiterate one more time for Indie Media listeners what folks in the Indie Media Global Network can do to support Ahmed Ben Souda and the other political prisoners now being held in the hands of the INS and FBI, both regionally and globally. Please give the name of your website again, where people can contact you, and if you want to make a last-minute appeal to people in Madison and in surrounding communities to come to Chicago on Friday, please do so.
Okay, well, for those who want to get in touch with us and to receive the updates as these events unfold, please go to www.friendsoflarry.org. The Urbana-Champaign Indie Media site, I'd like to send a special thanks out to them because they have been supporting us since the beginning. They immediately helped us bring the story to the forefront. They will also be having updates there and probably will be linking with other Indie Media sites as well as the Friends of Larry website. For folks in Chicago, the Chicago area, Wisconsin, please, we need your support. We'd like you all to be there Friday, the 21st, June 21st, we will be meeting at noon. We're going to have a demonstration that begins at noon. It will be at the INS Courthouse in downtown Chicago on 10 West Jackson. Again, all these details will be on the website. So at noon, we'll be convening to demonstrate and to demand the release of Ahmed. His court hearing, which is going to be a closed court hearing, will be at 1. Okay? Now, as far as the focus of the campaign, again, the regional campaign will be focused on freeing Ahmed, Ahmed Ben Souda, who has been abducted by the FBI and the INS. But we hope to push for a national campaign demanding the release of other political prisoners, including Ahmed, political prisoners who are focused around Palestine solidarity work. And what we hope to see in the future for those interested are putting together speaking tours, as well as coordinated actions between us and other locals.